know, my head went to 100 different places. You know, will I ever be a full-time broadcaster again? Will broadcasters ever travel again, as we started to hear the conversation about broadcaster travel going away for a long time? Will the Loons survive missing an entire season? What will happen with not a Major League Baseball taking over Minor League Baseball? You know, what a lot of things, you know, is a career change needed?
Thank you so much for hitting the play button on your favorite listening device of choice from wherever you listen to podcasts. My name is Duff Tyler, and this is A Duff Said. Now, this week, we're talking minor league baseball. Now, as I'm recording this show, the Major League Baseball All-Star Game is right around the corner. Now, for young stars like Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Fernando Tatis Jr., Bo Bichette, and the Detroit Tigers' Gregory Soto, this is a chance to shine on one of the game's biggest stages. But before they became big shots in the big leagues, they were a different type of all-star. The road to Coors Field in Colorado for these four guys actually started at Dow Diamond in Midland, Michigan. 4 years ago, they took part in the Midwest League All-Star Game, and they weren't the only ones whose careers included a stop at Dow Diamond. The stadium is home to the Great Lakes Loons. They are the single-A minor league affiliate to the Los Angeles Dodgers. When the ballpark opened its doors in 2007, a young pitcher by the name of Clayton Kershaw took the mound. Now, his time in Midland was brief, but his run as one of the most dominant pitchers in Major League Baseball has been going for a decade. When the Dodgers won the World Series last year, Kershaw was one of 13 players on the roster that played for the Loons. But while the Dodgers were celebrating, the Loons didn't play a single game last season. That's because the entire minor league baseball season was wiped out because of the coronavirus pandemic. Now, the impact that that had on all those teams in the minors was catastrophic. Typically, minor league baseball brings in more than $1 billion in revenue. With the season gone, they lost 90% of those expected funds. Now, currently owners are working with Congress for help. They're hoping for $550 million in coronavirus relief funds that were already approved but remain unspent. The money would go to help these clubs recover massive losses that resulted in thousands of full-time, part-time, and seasonal employees that lost their jobs. My guest this week is Loons radio announcer Brad Tunney. Brad joined the Loons as a part-timer in the booth back in 2015. 4 years later, he became the full-time voice of the Loons. We talked about the hardships that the Loons went through and how they survived it. As you're about to hear, not all the changes that occurred because of the pandemic were a bad thing. We'll get to that a little later, but first, I wanted Brad to lay out just what exactly it's like to be a minor league baseball announcer. There's a lot that goes into it that you may not even realize. My conversation with Brad Tunney starts now. How good does it feel to be back in the broadcast booth calling Great Lakes Loons baseball?
Feels great. I didn't, you don't appreciate, I guess, how much you enjoy doing it until it is gone. And even while it is gone, like it was last summer, part of you was even like, hey, it feels good just to have time off and not be working every day during the summer. And even though there weren't many things to enjoy last summer, it was just nice to be able to kind of wake up and, enjoy warm weather and getting tan and sitting outside and doing, keeping up with yard work and things like that. And, but in the same breath, getting back into it this summer, has kind of reinstilled in me why I enjoy doing it so much. So, you don't know how good things are until they're gone. And so, kind of being forced to take a year off last year, not only taking a year off like of what we do, but of just watching what we typically watch, of not having baseball to watch during the normal parts of the summer, not having other sports to watch, not having other broadcasters that we typically listen to, available to listen to. And so all of that being gone and then getting it all back this summer has really, I think, reinstilled in a lot of us, and me in particular, why we enjoy it and the high that we get in doing it and all those other things.
Where did that passion for baseball first come from? Because like you said, you weren't able to do it for the longest time. So when did you first discover it? And have you kind of rediscovered it now that you're in the booth?
Yeah. I mean, baseball in particular has never been one of my favorite sports, to be honest. I mean, I'm a basketball, football guy, and, but in the same breath, like, baseball obviously affords broadcasters and myself included the opportunity to do more games than any other sport. And so that's how I got started in baseball years ago, is simply because the opportunities are more present. And granted, now they probably aren't because of all the cuts in minor league baseball and college wood bat ball and all that other stuff. But I think the passion for this year in particular has just come out, and because it's, you know, at the core of broadcasting, you're just talking to people and communicating stories. And baseball affords you the opportunity to do that more than any other sport. One, talk to people because the games are longer, and so you end up talking to an audience for longer. And secondarily, you have more time to actually communicate their stories. And so I think being away from it for, you know, over a year, at least in a routine sense, getting back into baseball instead of another sport, you know, kind of full bore before we get back into football or basketball or anything like that, I think has actually made me appreciate baseball a little bit more than I probably did in the past, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely it does. Now, I do want to give you props for something, because I've been listening to you for a number of years now. In fact, I think I've been listening to you since at least 2015 on ESPN 100.9 out of Midland. Whenever you are doing a game and you're behind the mic, you tell me everything that you see and hear at the ballpark. And whenever I'm listening to you, I feel like I'm sitting in section 100 at Dow Diamond with the way that you're describing everything. You tell me what color the uniforms are. You tell me what color hats they're wearing. You tell me what color socks they have on. You even tell me what color their bat is as the batter is standing in the box. And whenever I'm listening to you, I'm picturing in my mind the matchup that is going on between the pitcher and the hitter. Now, I know a lot of guys do this, but whenever I'm listening to you, I feel like I'm sitting right there next to you in the booth at Dow Diamond.
Sure. I mean, at the core of, and I appreciate that, Duff. I mean, at the core of what we're doing is simply painting a picture for folks who can't be at the game. And, you know, I think what gets lost a lot of time for most broadcasters is the fact that, you know, our job is not just talking to people, because that's simply just, I don't think, and at least the industry, as we know, just based on how they're comped and how they're seen in organizations, that is not enough to garner, you know, a livable wage and anything else in what we do. And so, you know, part of that description comes into creating a FOMO for people listening. You know, you want to make people want to be at the next game. And so being overly descriptive and being descriptive in a way that people that have maybe been to one game before or a handful of games before can kind of reminisce or reimagine the last time they were at the game to make them want to come to another game is really important. If that line kind of makes sense on why the description matters, on creating FOMO, on creating memories visually for people when they're not physically at the ballpark. That mindset is something that I've had to kind of, you know, come to terms with over the years and how I broadcast. But I mean, just in terms of how I describe things, and I think, you know, being descriptive and knowing what a good broadcast is, a lot of that came from when I was working my first couple of years here under former Loons broadcaster Chris Vosters, who I owe a lot to as to who the broadcaster I am now. You know, he was, I mean, extremely sound in the way he approached the game, and, you know, was a rat in terms of listening to other broadcasters, taking notes, studying his own tape, and that kind of approach to the game, and then the way he called the game and sitting in the booth with him so often kind of sculpted who I was as a broadcaster. And I'm sure he would say the same thing about the broadcasters that he worked under prior to that, Alex Vespoli and, you know, guys that he learned from at Wisconsin. So it all is kind of a hand-me-down, and kind of hearing the same thing with guys that I've worked with, you know, in the last couple of years that have, you know, been my assistants, and hearing the way that their game starts to be cultivated by how I sound in the booth. And, you know, I think there's a right way to calling baseball. You know, everyone has their own unique way of how they sound and how they're described things, but there certainly is a right way to do it, to where you're giving all the pertinent information and not losing track of what's important in a game. And I think there are some things that are kind of non-negotiable in a baseball game. And that is, you know, obviously the score in the inning and who's on base and where they are. But I think what's also non-negotiable is some of the things that you just complimented of, hey, what color is the bat and the socks and what are the smells at the ballpark? Like that's at the core what you're supposed to be doing, because no one can see the actual game. So kind of a long-winded answer, but I guess that's kind of where I learned from. And now that, you know, Chris is gone and I've been on my own for a couple of years now, or at least with a new partner in the booth, kind of where my mindset has shifted over the years as well.
Now, you talked about how you're more into football and basketball. Those are really fast-paced sports. Those are things where things are happening all the time. But with baseball, there's a lot of time in between pitches. I know they're trying to kind of limit the amount of time that there is between pitches, in which everybody is getting set for what they need to do. But it is over the course of 3 hours that you have to talk and really just describe everything that's going on throughout that entire 9-inning game, or whatever the case may be. How much prep time do you put into that to make sure that you always have something ready to say in between those pitches?
So it's kind of a two-part question. Anytime I get a question like this, I always think about the idea that baseball is very similar to a pop quiz in school, in that, you know, basketball, if, you know, typically with the basketball that I call, either whether it be high school or Division II basketball or G League basketball at this point in my career, those are really never more than two games a week or two nights of broadcasts a week. Football is obviously one game a week. Those feel like tests or exams, to use kind of, you know, academic analogies, whereas baseball is kind of a pop quiz. You're showing up every day to the classroom, or, you know, in our case, the ballpark, and you're taking a pop quiz. And a lot of times, you know, thinking back to our days in school, pop quizzes was just information from the day before. You know, it might be more basic, but it's also stuff that you build upon from, say, maybe the recent pop quiz, whatever it may be. So to kind of connect that analogy to baseball broadcasting, you know, when you're doing it every day, a lot of times you don't have to spend the same amount of prep going into a broadcast that you would for a football or basketball game. And one, it's because you don't have as much time. You typically have a day or the day of to prepare for a baseball game, whereas you have an entire week for football or 2 or 3 days for basketball. And so you really have to have the mindset that it's like a pop quiz. You don't necessarily need to have 100% of the information, because a lot of the information that could be on that quiz or could be talked about in the game most likely comes from yesterday's game, or, again, to connect the analogy, yesterday's lesson plan or whatever it may be. So, you know, for a football or basketball game, I typically say that there's probably an hour and a half to 2 hours of prep for every hour on air. That's kind of like a little bit of a golden rule for me, is that if I'm going to be on the air for a high school football game or a Division II football game or a G League basketball game for, say, 3 hours, I want to spend probably 6 hours that week prepping for the game, filling out my spot boards, talking to coaches, practicing pronunciations, studying and writing down multiple times, so then it's organic, the bios and facts that I want to use or statistics. And then for baseball, you know, there are some days where, unfortunately, I sit down at first pitch and all I have done in terms of prep is the lineup card filled out, which could have taken me 30 minutes. Now, along with that, there's, you know, an hour in my game notes of prepping for that, but that's more kind of I see it as office work than it is really hard prepping for a game. So thing is, you can get through a baseball game without fully prepping for it if you're with the team every day, as we are. And that's the benefit of being a full-time broadcaster with the team. But again, I think it's imperative that you stay connected with the team each and every day, build off of what you learned the day before, then become curious about what took place the following day. And if that means looking up someone's bio or going down to the clubhouse and talking with them. And so we're on air for baseball longer than we would be for football or basketball. But I would say the prep time is probably cut in half, to where for a 3-hour football game, I may prep 6 to 8 hours. For a 3-hour or 4-hour baseball broadcast, I may prep 3 or 4 hours the day of. In a perfect situation, I would have 3 or 4 hours of prep. A lot of days, just because the days run into each other every single day during a baseball season, you get busy, other job tasks, whatever it may be, it's probably 1.5 to 3 hours, I would say.
Yeah, because you do have a life outside of this. It's not just baseball and go back to sleep and repeat. You actually do have a home life. So how do you balance the two, knowing that you've got a lot of information that you got to absorb in order to do the next day's broadcast?
Right. I mean, that's the toughest part, I think, for any broadcaster, especially broadcasters that aren't, you know, fresh out of college, and you know, everyone's situation is different. But, you know, I think a lot of broadcasters' life fresh out of college is, you know, you're living in an apartment in a city you're probably not from. You're kind of doing this on your own. You're probably not getting paid very well. And you can really invest yourself 100% in your job and kind of pull back, you know, whether it be a positive or a negative, from any type of family, social, or personal life that you may have. And unfortunately, that's what the industry calls upon. I mean, it's unfortunate the industry is that way. And I'm lucky enough to have a job where I'm afforded the opportunity to have somewhat of a life outside of it. But, you know, I think the industry would really benefit from acknowledging what it does to people fresh out of college, and even people in college, the way it beats them down. And that it's the same way we see a lot of attrition in minor league baseball athletes, where we see a lot of athletes retiring at 26 because they're not getting paid enough. It's a lot of hours. There's probably not a path for them to really reach their dream. And the same can be said for broadcasters. The amount of broadcasters we've seen leave the industry in the last 2 years, whether it be from COVID, or whether it just be from, you know, getting to an age where they want to actually start a family. It's just kind of sad that, you know, you can't do this a majority of the time and think about starting a family or having a personal life, having a social life, keeping up with your family well enough when you're in your 20s to do both. But in saying all of that, you know, I tell young broadcasters all the time that the investment in yourself in terms of broadcasting when you're 20 to 25 is really important. You just got to do it 100%. There can't be any questions that you don't want to do it, because you're going to fall behind the guys that are invested 100%. And then once you hopefully settle into something between 25 and 30, the way I've been very fortunate to do and lucky to have, then you can kind of start to work on other things. And I have found that, you know, now that I have kind of taken a step back from just being like a blood, sweat, and tears 24 hours devoted to broadcasting a day, my broadcasts have probably benefited from it, just because my life has more balance in it now. And so there's not as much pressure that I put on myself each and every time I turn the mic on. I'm generally happier. And so that obviously makes the broadcast better. I take care of myself physically better, so that obviously affects the broadcast in a positive way. And so there's a fine line for young broadcasters to try and toe of, do I run myself down so much and remove myself from so many other things outside of my professional life and invest it 100% into my professional life, when, you know, I don't think a lot of people realize it from 20 to 25, that it may actually be hurting what you're doing professionally because you don't have balance in your life. I think it's probably the hardest part of the industry is figuring out that line and how to straddle it to be happy and, you know, have a good work-life balance and have a good kind of career development life balance as well, if all of that makes sense.
Absolutely, it does. And one thing I'd like to add to that is, you're not just going to work every day in the city you live. There's a lot of traveling involved. How much traveling have you done with the Loons over the years?
So I would say it's obviously gone down since COVID and everything has kind of turned things around and made people reimagine and kind of reconfigure the way they do things. But in a typical year pre-COVID, I always estimated that I was in a hotel room probably 20% of the nights during the year. So that was, roughly 60 nights or more during the baseball season with the Loons, and then roughly maybe 15 to 20 nights and maybe high with Northwood basketball, and then a night or two here or there when I might have stayed in Grand Rapids with the Grand Rapids Drive doing their games. It's a lot of travel, but I think, you know, there are some positives and negatives to everything that's kind of been reimagined in the last year in terms of remote broadcasts. I think it's extremely important for guys at the network level to be in the facility with the games that they're calling. We've obviously seen a lot of conversation and discourse on and the national level with, these College World Series broadcasts that we're watching right now, when they're not on site, it very much so does affect the broadcast. Now, I would say that at the minor league level, when you have a home broadcast and you're the home broadcaster for the team, even at the Big Four level, even if you're, say, the Pistons radio or TV announcer, say you're Blaha or Mark Champion, I don't necessarily know that it's 100% all that important to be on the road with the team, simply because the energy that is in the visiting arena does not apply to the energy that then you are broadcasting with as the home broadcaster for the road team, if that makes sense. And, you know, again, getting back to, I think a lot of broadcasters may be missing the point on what is important for the value of your position with your organization or your network, or even as a freelancer. If your value added can be, hey, I can make a remote broadcast sound 95% as good as being in person, and it saves the organization X amount of dollars, that has true value. And so, you know, we've reimagined how we do things on the Loon side, and our I'm very fortunate for our leadership has, you know, supported me in a way that if I don't want to travel to a series, they've supported me in that. You know, if I want to stay home and make sure I'm available for whatever that needs to be done around the house, or if I have plans that I want to, you know, do something during the day, they've supported that. And on the flip side of that, I know it's financially beneficial on the other side of it, because traveling me, whether it be with a hotel room plus per diem plus other costs associated with remote broadcast equipment, all of that has a cost. And so if it can save money, bring in the same amount of revenue, and we can pull off a broadcast that's damn near 100% close to what it would be if I was on the road, then that has true value. And so what we're doing right now is kind of on a case-by-case basis. And so, you know, I have an event this weekend, not traveling with the team, and it's going to, you know, save hundreds of dollars. But at the same time, we're still going to do just as effective of a broadcast. And I'm also going to be available to do more things around the office this week that, you know, has revenue-driving consequences. So it's a give and take. I think by this time next year, we'll probably be traveling, I would say, to 80% of the trips, whereas this year we'll probably be traveling to 50% of the trips. So it probably will get a little bit more. But I think, you know, if any broadcaster at my level in particular, at the minor league level or at the small network level, feels like they need to be on the road 100% of the time, I think there's certainly more discussion that needs to be had in terms of what the value is of doing that. And if there is more value added from your position being at home.
I think it's actually one of those things that may not be a bad thing to not be on the road, because every series this year that I'm looking at the schedule is a 6-game series. It's almost like you're a playoff series every time you start up with a new team. What has it been like to try to call 6 games in a row with the same team every time you're going out and broadcasting these games?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of concerned about it to start the year. I think all of us as broadcasters were, especially because it's not only 6 games in a row against one team this year. It's also, for a majority of the division, 24 total games against the same team. And so in years past, we would never play a team, say, more than 20 times in a season. And that would be spread apart between, say, six, 3 or 4 game series. So at that point, by the end of a series, you're probably not out of, you know, bio repurposing for on-air stuff or statistical stuff or talking about certain guys. But by the end of a series, you know, going into the year, I was slightly concerned on, oh boy, are we going to, you know, is content on a broadcast going to be hard to come by? And fortunately, it just hasn't gotten to that point yet this season. And who knows? I mean, we're still, you know, we've played every team in our league twice at, you know, when we talk here at the end of June, and we're about to see Fort Wayne for the first time this season. So, you know, seeing a team for the first time, 6 games, becomes really easy to discuss them. I mean, you can hit on 3 of their position player full bios each day while still discussing the normal ins and outs of the game and things that come and go in terms of storylines each day and probably be fine getting through the series. And minor league baseball rosters turn over a lot too, to where when you see a team, they may have their, you know, half their starting lineup may be different, but it hasn't gotten to a point yet this year, fortunately, where say at game 5 or 6 at the end of a series, it's like, oh boy, we've seen these guys 12 times this month. What are we going to talk about with their team? And so that has been good that it hasn't reached that point yet. But it was a concern coming into the season, I'd say.
What was the reaction from the manager and the players of the organization when that schedule was announced?
I think they all took it for what it's worth, just in terms of, you know, knowing that it was put in place for their health and safety. You know, the day off was, you know, the one day off every single week was put in place, you know, just in case of, you know, is there a COVID outbreak here? Is there, you know, a need for, oh boy, we had 4 COVID cases on this team. We got to fly in 3 players to replace them on the roster. Okay. So we need that extra day. You know, for all of those reasons, you know, we wanted to give organizations a chance on Monday to sweep their ballparks, clean them, and get ready for a new homestand if they need to. Whatever it may be, it was put in place. Now, fortunately, pretty much every reason that was outlined by Major League Baseball for needing the off day, and, you know, that wasn't just something Major League Baseball mandated. That was something that the teams asked for, the parent clubs asked for. And so, fortunately, for a lot of those reasons, it hasn't been needed yet. It's not like there's been really any COVID cases across minor league baseball. And the fact that a lot of these states, based on vaccination rates, are at 100% capacity now, a lot of the restrictions that were put in place at the beginning of the year are no longer needed. So I think at the end of the day, those Mondays just serve as a good rest day for what is, as you know, and everyone knows, just a grind of a schedule through the season. And so, you know, Major League Baseball has handed out surveys to parent clubs, and they have trickled down into, you know, the coaching staffs for every single minor league club. Asking how they feel about the schedule, because it, you know, this is not the schedule that is written into the PDL going in next year. We're going to play an additional 12 games. We're going to have fewer off days, but, you know, if enough parent clubs report back to Major League Baseball and say, hey, we really like one day off every week. And if enough minor league clubs, you know, fill out their surveys and say, hey, we really like the one day off a week as well. Even if the season is longer, it's nice having a day off for our employees. It's nice having a day off just to close down the ballpark and whatnot. And who knows how it's going to play out. But I think in terms of the conversations I've had with our front office, conversations I've had with players and coaches, they've loved the schedule this year when you compare it to schedules in previous years, when there were times when sometimes we would play 23 days in a row without an off day, or, you know, we started the season in early April when there'd be snow, you know, some days during games, which is obviously not something you want in baseball. And so who knows how those surveys will get turned back in? Who knows how the conversation will shift now, whether it be, hey, we're still going to play 132, but maybe instead of playing 3-game series or 4-game series like we've done in the past, let's meet in the middle with what we did this year with 6-game series and do 5-game series every single time. And so there's less travel and, you know, we can see every single starting pitcher every single series, which I know coaching staffs like. So there's a lot that goes into the pros and the cons of a schedule like this. And I'll be really interested to see how the conversation changes, shifts, and ultimately draws up a schedule for next year, whether that be by the end of this season or in the off season.
Coming up, we talk to Brad about the impact the pandemic had on the Loons. Support for A Duff Said comes from you, the listener. It also comes from people like Bethany and Michelle, who recently became patrons of this podcast. And you can too. For as little as $2 a month or $24 a year, you can help A Duff Said continue to grow and continue to provide the great content that you've come to expect from me each week. And if you're a patron, you get access to exclusive content that sometimes doesn't make it into the show. So just go to patron.podbean.com/A Duff Said. We are joined by Brad Tunney, the play-by-play voice of the Great Lakes Loons. They are the High A affiliate of the Los Angeles Dodgers. They play at Dow Diamond in Midland, and we were just talking about how the schedule is a lot different from in years past, but after what happened last year, I'm sure these guys are just thrilled to be back at the ballpark doing what they love.
100%. You know, a lot of these guys, you know, whether it be due to their financial situation or geographic situation, whatever it may be, maybe did not have the opportunity to train the same way they did last year or to have the same diet that they did during the season or, you know, whatever it is. I mean, schedules were thrown out the door for everyone in terms of what a typical routine is during the summer. So I think more than anything, baseball and baseball players is a sport and are people of routine and habit, and to be thrown out of that for an entire summer threw a lot of guys for a loop in terms of how they train, how they eat, you know, how they, you know, manage financially without a baseball season. So everything got thrown off. And I think more than anything, just getting back into a routine, into a habit, doing things that obviously they love and are chasing a dream from. Yeah. I mean, no one is unhappy with that. And if they are, they probably did not, you know, come back to the sport, as we saw a lot of guys either ask for their release by their major league clubs in recent months or just outright retire. You know, anyone left is certainly super excited about being back.
I want to go back to last season and specifically back during high school basketball season, because you were calling games for the Saginaw Valley League in high school for the Mid-Michigan area. And then we start to hear all of these things that are happening with the coronavirus. And suddenly we're hearing terms like social distancing and all that stuff. And eventually it does make its way into the sports world. And we start to see the NCAA tournament get canceled. And then we see the basketball season for high school in the state of Michigan get canceled. There's no state tournament. There are no spring sports at all. And as you're watching all of this unfold as a broadcaster, what's going through your mind at that point?
Boy, a lot. You know, in March of last year, the last game I called was the Northwood men's team in the GLIAC championship on the Monday prior to the Thursday or whatever, where a lot of the restrictions got placed around the country. So, you know, we were full well preparing to travel with the team to the to their postseason tournament and started up that week. And obviously that got shut down. I was working with Blake Froehling at the time at 100.9 FM. And, you know, Blake, we were discussing on that Wednesday prior to the shutdowns on that Thursday, hey, should we broadcast the game tonight? You know, should we go to a high school gym where that high school is contemplating not even playing? Should we go there, put our broadcaster at risk, whatever it may be? I mean, we had no idea what it was at the time. You know, our office was closing down. And so if our office was closing, why are we sending a broadcaster out to a high school? I mean, all of those discussions were being had. And, you know, obviously no one ever thought that it would turn into what it did. But I think over the course of the next few months, April, May, June, July, ultimately the cancellation of the entire minor league baseball season and everything else, you know, my head went to 100 different places. You know, will I ever be a full-time broadcaster again? Will broadcasters ever travel again? As we started to hear the conversation about broadcaster travel going away for a long time, will the Loons survive missing an entire season? What will happen with Major League Baseball taking over Minor League Baseball, you know, what a lot of things, you know, is a career change needed? Is a move needed? I mean, everything swirls through your head when your career and, you know, basically the industry that you work in comes screeching to a halt. And we were not unique to that. A lot of industries did. But, you know, Minor League Baseball is a is an industry that obviously operates on pretty thin margins and, you know, operates with a lot of people that love what they do. And to see all of that washed away and to have to think about a future for all of our employees and myself included, was just like it was for a lot of people, pretty scary last year.
And they didn't come to that decision right away. There was some time in which they were contemplating what they were going to do with baseball. And ultimately, we found out we were going to get a 60-game schedule in the majors. The major league team for the Loons, the Los Angeles Dodgers, obviously, they got their season and they went on to win the World Series. But for you guys, it all came to a halt in June and the season was wiped out. What was the reaction from everybody in the organization when that news finally came down?
I think there was a lot of different reactions of one, this is just really weird. And you know, the ballpark still had a lot of work to be done to it just to keep it running. Like, you know, there's going to be some communication coming out from the Loons in the next couple of days. And from, I'm sure, a lot of clubs with a bipartisan bill that was passed through Congress to help revive the funds that were lost by minor league clubs from last season. You know, I'm sure a lot of people don't realize that, like, our ballpark takes, you know, upwards of $10,000 a month just to keep, you know, the pipes from not freezing and the heat in the air from running and just very basic things to keep a ballpark like that afloat. And so when you don't play any baseball and you've got a front office staff of 40, and then, you know, when the news broke that we weren't going to play baseball, half the people in our front office lost their jobs. And that was probably what hit the hardest is, you know, there's people that you show up to work with every day that you consider family or friends or whoever it may be. And they've now lost their jobs. And then you have another 5 to 10 people who have been furloughed and who knows what the future status of their workplace, you know, or their job at the ballpark will be. And so I think when the news broke that we weren't going to be playing any baseball last year, it was, boy, how do we retain as many employees as possible? How do we then, with the employees that remain, and I was fortunate to be one that did, how do we put them now in a position to succeed because of the fact that we have half the staff now and a lot of their friends and coworkers for so many years are gone? How do we comfort them through all of that and make sure? So, I give a lot of credit to the Loons leadership for handling it well at the time and going through the process the right way and ultimately putting us in a position to succeed this season. But I think that was probably the first thought, the biggest thought in everyone's mind is just, boy, a lot of people are losing their jobs right now. Could more people lose their jobs? How many of these people will get their jobs back? Where will it be? All of that stuff.
Right. That is one of the toughest lessons that the sports world learned from the coronavirus and a lot of these broadcasting entities that own those organizations and have the rights to broadcast their games. If there's no sports, there's no money coming in. And for, like you said, a lot of people, that was the loss of their job. In addition to the Loons, you're also working for ESPN 100.9 in Midland, and your guys' office is located in the ballpark. How did ESPN manage to survive this whole tumultuous situation with no sports?
So, I mean, I think it's an extreme blessing that the ballpark has the radio station on top of having ownership of the ballpark, whereas a lot of ballparks in minor league baseball are not owned by the teams. They're either owned by the city or whoever or whatever it may be, and they don't have full control over the venue itself. And, you know, in our case, you know, when things really hit the fan last year, the question became how do we retain all of these dollars? How do we retain ticket sales? How do we retain corporate sponsorships? How do we retain events that were scheduled at the ballpark that, you know, now can't take place? And so having the opportunity to kind of have a multitude of ways to fulfill promises to, you know, people who plan on spending money with us. Having baseball in 2021 helped, having a radio station to where we could fulfill corporate sponsorship stuff with radio ads is something that is unique to us. No other ballpark most likely had that opportunity. And then also having the opportunity to, you know, promise future events at the ballpark for some corporate clients once restrictions were pulled, say Christmas parties in the suite level or, you know, corporate events on the concourse level. All of those things were at our disposal to kind of soften the blow financially that a lot of other teams did not have the opportunity or, you know, have the opportunity to work with. So I think that's a huge benefit for us. It's a huge, I think, feather in the cap of the folks who started all of this 15 years ago and had the idea to bring this kind of facility to Midland and the Great Lakes Bay region. And so to answer your question, how the radio station survived. Well, I mean, we went into the pandemic with, I always say, like six full-time employees. There were five full-time employees on the radio payroll. And then we had support from the creative services team on the Loon side, the marketing team on the Loon side, and then our general manager who oversaw us was on the Loon side. And so I think you put all three of those positions together and say they're at least doing maybe a half full-time job for the radio station. So we had six to seven full-timers with radio, and right now we have three. And so, you know, the radio station took its lumps. As you can imagine, a lot of our business comes from small mom and pop shops in Midland. Those obviously suffered last year, and so we suffered a bit too. But, you know, reducing payroll, you know, with some tough cuts on the staff, and again, being very fortunate that I was not one of them, was big for us. And reimagining the way we do things and how we sell things moving forward, and, you know, how we did some things, you know, helped a lot. And so in that sense, you know, it's terrible that folks lost their job through all of us, but it forced the radio station and forced the Loons to reimagine how they were doing things in terms of a financial efficiency standpoint, which I think is going to make us better in the future.
And if you would like to catch Brad and the Great Lakes Loons, all you have to do is go to ESPN100.9.com. Check out their website. They don't just have Great Lakes Loons basketball, but like we talked about earlier, Brad, you're also a broadcaster for the Saginaw Valley League, which covers a lot of teams in the Flint and mid-Michigan area. So even though there was not a baseball season, there was a time last summer where you probably were thinking, well, if we can just weather this storm, we can get to high school football season, and then people will have sports, and we can broadcast those games. And they start the first week of practice getting ready for the football season, and then that gets put on hold. And at that point, you guys have to be pulling your hair out thinking, man, what are we going to do now?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that was an interesting time, too, for us. I think back to our mindset during the fall, and at that point, you know, I was furloughed, and the only chance I had to be brought back on the payroll was the football season starting. So, you know, I was right there with all of the folks who were fighting to bring high school football back, while also being mindful of the fact that it was probably brought back at the right time. Ultimately, I think if it was brought back any sooner, you know, that we would have, you know, threatened, you know, the safety of everyone in the state, and or, you know, probably if started too early, could have started too early, and then maybe had to stop again if cases rose too much. So ultimately think it started at the right time, and obviously we got through it, and I was brought back on a full-time capacity because of it. You know, because broadcasting a high school football game requires me to work about 10 hours a week or whatever it may be, not just on air, but prep and also take care of all the radio programming needs that go along with it. And, you know, had to, you know, rehire, producing staff and all that other stuff. So, yeah, I mean, we were very fortunate that we were given the opportunity to broadcast those games, not only that, you know, the players were able to play, but that we were allowed back into press boxes and that clients stuck with us to want to be on those football broadcasts. And same goes for the basketball season, you know, despite it being indoors and having to wear a mask during the broadcast and all that other stuff, it was, you know, worked out well and allowed us to bridge the gap as a radio station to get back to baseball season.
Yeah, eventually those games were allowed to resume. The football season started. What would have been week four became week one. And yep. There were some draws in there too, of course, because the state finals got pushed back to January and high school basketball got put on hold because of what they were calling like the third wave of the coronavirus here in the state of Michigan. So when they do bring that back, like you said, you had to wear a mask in order to broadcast those games. What was that like? That had to be something different for you, I'm sure.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I would bring a couple of disposable masks with me, and I would bring this mask that I found. I was given by another broadcaster in the area that, it was a really nice fabric. It wasn't too warm. And at the same time, it stretched a little bit. So while you talked, it kind of went in and out. And so, I mean, it was different, but I mean, ultimately, anyone I talked to that listened to the broadcast couldn't even tell that I was wearing one. And I think, we've probably watched so many sports games in the last 8 months or whatever it may be, or the last year, where broadcasters were wearing masks and we didn't realize it because it sounded pretty similar. So it ultimately was not that big of a discomfort for me. Obviously something that was necessary, especially if I was like courtside, if the players were wearing masks, we obviously wanted to wear masks because I'm sitting there talking and, a lot of times like spitting into the mask because we're getting excited. I mean, that's what broadcasters do. Like you end up projecting a little bit. And the masks were necessary. And I think it wasn't all that much of a discomfort for me at all by the end of it.
I'm glad it worked out for you because ever since the mask mandates went into place, I have eaten so many masks just trying to talk and do interviews with people. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I nearly swallowed one just trying to, try to talk and enunciate with that still on my face. So I'm glad that those restrictions are getting lifted, and I'm glad that you guys found your way back to the broadcast booth. You guys are back at Dow Diamond. What would you say is the one thing that you learned about yourself during this whole experience?
Boy, it's a good question. I mean, I think I go back to kind of the thought of work-life balance in that, I think broadcasters, especially in the minor leagues and front office employees in the minor leagues, they work so many hours during the summer and broadcasters, are on the same schedule as umpires and players and coaches, and that there's really no days off in a normal minor league baseball season. Prior to this season, it's 140 games in 152 days, and half of those 12 off days were travel days. And so you had about six total days off in 152 days from April to Labor Day. And having all of that time off last year, I think for some people was, boy, this feels really good. I don't want to go back to the job I was doing, whether that had been in sales or any industry, right? And so it makes you kind of put into perspective what's important. And I think now that we're back doing it, I think a lot of organizations, and again, being really fortunate to work for the Loons, who I think have embraced this and acknowledged the fact that people got comfortable with remote work. People got comfortable with a better work-life balance in the last year to where that's something that they need to provide because their employees want it. Very fortunate that the Loons have, I think, seen that and given that opportunity to employees, including myself. And I think that's one big thing that I've learned about myself, that there are things that, you can do outside of your profession, outside of what you can do in baseball, and making sure you do those things so you don't miss out on certain things or invest yourself too heavily into your profession is really important. And so refinding some of the things that I enjoyed outside of the sport, hobbies, TV, whatever it is, right? Refinding those things, reinvesting yourself in those things, and then making sure that your profession doesn't retake those now that we're doing it again, I'd say is something that I learned a lot of.
I am so glad for you, man, that you found that balance in your life, because it can be a drag on just about anybody having to constantly show up at the office day in and day out. One of my closest friends works for the Detroit Tigers, and he told me that once the season starts in late March or early April, I'm pretty much unavailable until the season's over. And,
right.
And you can see why some guys would really wear out really quickly on a schedule like that, and suddenly they're done working at age 26 and they're finding something new to do, because it can be a drain on you mentally and physically. And so now that you've found that balance, you're back at the ballpark, you're back at Dow Diamond, and the fans are back with you too. How awesome has it been to see a lot of people in the seats at Dow Diamond this season?
It's huge. I mean, the opening day at our ballpark was the largest amount of people at one event in the region in, you know, 12 months. So, you know, that's what was said at a staff meeting prior to opening day, just in terms of the, you know, putting things into context and kind of understanding the magnitude of what it means to be given that opportunity as a sports venue. And then, you know, come when everything was opened up that first week of June, you know, that Saturday we had roughly 4,000 people at our ballpark, which again became the biggest event in the region in 14 months. And I mean, it just feels great. And, you know, being in those types of venues, and obviously being in it almost every day when the team's at home, and being around that many unmasked people and everything else, it feels really good, just like it does for everyone else who are getting back to work. But when our work is a venue that can, you know, sometimes have 5,000 people in a close space, in one confined space, all kind of cheering for the same thing, that energy is something, you know, we haven't felt in 15, 16 months. And, you know, having the opportunity to be a part of that energy is really, really cool.
Does it feel normal to you again?
I'd say so. I mean, there are still some things that aren't fully normal about what we do at the ballpark. I mean, there are still days where we'll Zoom interview players, which, again, I mean, I think is a positive. Like, the fact that everyone is kind of familiar and comfortable with doing remote work is, you know, a positive for everyone involved. There are a lot of jobs at our ballpark in particular, too, that you don't need to be in the office for. And so, if you can create a happier work environment for your employees, then why not do that instead of mandating that they have to come sit at a desk that they don't need to be at all the time? So there are things that are, you know, new normal that, you know, I think new normal was almost seen as a negative thing for a lot of months, but there are certainly things that became new normal last year that are positives that have stuck around. I mean, even on the TV side, you know, there are a lot of interviews still being done via Zoom or whatever it may be that might not have been interviews you could have gotten because the guy lives, or the person you want to talk to lives on the other side of the country. And so it just has to be done that way. And in years past, maybe not everyone would have been comfortable with doing something like that. So there are parts of the new normal that have stuck that I hope stick. You know, sometimes remote, like we were talking about remote broadcasting in the past, I think that certainly has some value for in certain avenues of professional broadcasting. And, but for the most part, everything else is pretty much back to normal, especially at our ballpark. I mean, no more social distancing, no more masks, no more weird lines or, graphics put on the walls or on the floor to dictate where people can walk and whatever else. So, you know, that's really solid. And it's, you know, it's good at our ballpark in particular, because, you know, over 90% of our coaching staff and players are vaccinated, and over 95% of our full-time employees are vaccinated. So even, and that was at the start of the season. So even at the start of the year, when there were still a ton of restrictions in place, we kind of felt like we were in our own bubble anyway. And so it's felt pretty normal, you know, with us for a couple of months now.
Up next, I talk to Brad about his history with the Loons and what's potentially in store for him in the future. Once again, I want to say thank you so much for hitting the play button on this podcast, and that includes two very special listeners, Michelle and Bethany. They recently became patrons of A Duff Said. Now, for as little as $2 a month, or $24 a year, you can help this show to continue to grow and provide the content that you enjoy. And if you become a patron of A Duff Said, we have got a lot of great gifts in store for you. We've got bumper stickers, we've got t-shirts, heck, I'll even record your voicemail message. So if you're having trouble ever figuring out what to say, I'll say it for you. And that's A Duff Said. If you'd like to become a patron of A Duff Said, all you got to do is go to patron.podbean.com/ a Duff set. We're talking with Brad Tunney. He is the play-by-play voice for the Great Lakes Loons. They are the single high-A affiliate of the Los Angeles Dodgers. When did you first start taking an interest in broadcast in general? Because, like we said at the start of the show, you were never really a big fan of doing baseball play-by-play, but you've always clearly had this passion for doing play-by-play. When did that first start for you?
Yeah, so I got really lucky that I found this passion when I was in high school, simply because I was invited by a guy that I met one of my first days in high school. Said, hey, you like sports? We've got a sports broadcasting club. Why don't you join it? I did. Discovered I had a passion for it. We were one of the only television stations in the state at the high school level where I went in Lance Cruz. And so got the opportunity to broadcast games when I was in high school, which set me up to have an interest in doing it in college. Went to Central Michigan, only school I applied to. I knew I wanted to go there.
Fire up
got
chips.
Some opportunities there. Yeah, that's right. And then, got lucky in that there was an opportunity at 100.9 when I was a sophomore in college. Just got really lucky that I was working hard when I was at CMU. 100.9 was in a sticky situation with their broadcasters, and so they needed some people. They put me on the air way before I should have ever been put on the air when I was 19 years old on a commercial radio station, and I just haven't left since. They haven't kicked me out since, and that's kind of what my path was since, dating back to when I was, I think when I was 14 or 15 as a freshman in high school starting out, and now, 10, 11 years later, still doing it, couldn't be more happier that it's actually turned into something after, a lot of folks, around me when I was in high school and college, made note of the fact that, you're not going to make any money doing this. It's really hard. Make sure you have a plan B. Make sure you have a side job, all this other stuff that kind of scares, a lot of people out of the industry, way before they need to be. And, the fact that, I'm 26 now and still doing it, I'm really fortunate for.
I really envy you, man, because you got your passion at such an early age and you've just continued to grow along with it. There's a lot of great things happening right now in Midland, and you found it at 19 years old. So you found a lot of success at the ballpark, and over the last several years now, you've gotten to see a lot of tremendous talent come up through the Great Lakes Loons. You've gotten to see guys from the Loons who've gone on to win a World Series with the Los Angeles Dodgers. You got to see guys like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette come up. They were out in Lansing. You got to see them when they first got their start. What are some of your fondest memories with the Loons? Because I'm listing some of mine right now, but what has been some of your favorite moments broadcasting for the Great Lakes Loons?
For sure. I mean, anytime anyone ever asks me that, there's a couple that, are pinpointed in my memory. One is the guys that you just mentioned right there with Vladdy and Fernando Tatis and Bo Bichette. They were all participants in our home run derby when we hosted the Midwest League All-Star Game in 2017. That was huge fun. The Dodgers, Raul Labanez was in town for that. There were a couple of other major leaguers, including Vlad Guerrero Sr. And so I hosted that home run derby from the field. Seeing all of those guys perform was awesome. I'll never forget that night. It rained. We had a rain delay for the home run derby. Then it continued. Fans stayed. A hometown guy, Carlos Rincon, who's still in the Dodgers organization, beat Vlad Guerrero Jr. in that. Thinking back to watching Vlad Guerrero and being 10 feet from him as he's hitting bombs at Dow Diamond, and now he's the best hitter in baseball, is it's kind of crazy to think about. And then the Loons Midwest League Championship in 2016, which was a day game on a Sunday that, we did not finish celebrating that until the wee hours of the morning the following day. That will always stick with me. I would say opening day this year is a memory that, will never go away. The fact that it took, over 500 days between games to get back on the air with the team, and then it finally happened. And, we unfortunately had to do it in front of a limited crowd, but still, the amount of people that reached out that watched the broadcast that day and later reached out after watching or listening to that, any broadcast that week was really cool. So those 3 days in particular, I would say stand out more than anything to me in my now 6 years here.
So you got some great memories already stored in the databanks, but what does the future hold for Brad Tunney?
Good question. Something obviously I think about a lot. I mean, I like you've said, you know, I'm in a situation that I will never take for granted, in terms of how the Loons take care of me financially and just in terms of how, you know, I'm taken care of with the resources that they afford the broadcast, which is something that not a lot of other minor league broadcasters can say. So certainly don't take that for granted for a second. Very lucky to be where I am. Very fortunate that I fell here in 2014 and 15 when I was in college, and, you know, haven't been kicked out yet, you know, survived last year and everything else. And, you know, we'll never take that for granted, certainly. So, you know, this is a place that I don't mind being at and, you know, plan to be at for a couple of years down the road. And, you know, until something comes up that, you know, really blows me away, whether that be with agent representation, finding opportunities that, you know, would be really beneficial for me, or whether that be, you know, a AAA club or a major league club, you know, whether it be studio hosting or number three broadcasting or pre and post hosting or something like that comes up, then, you know, this is our home for a, you know, a good while. And, you know, it's good to know that the Loons support me and the position and the radio station enough to where that can be said, because there are a lot of guys across the country, a lot of broadcasters across the country where the position is just not built for long-term sustainability. And, you know, very lucky to be in a position like that.
Well, I envy you right now because you're in a gorgeous situation right now living in Midland. I love that town. It is such an amazing atmosphere at the Dow Diamond. The fans at Community Stadium in downtown Midland are awesome. The whole community of Midland is awesome. But hey, man, wherever you go, I'll be listening. He is Brad Tunney, the voice of the Great Lakes Loons. You can catch him on ESPN 100.9 FM on your radio dial. You can also find them on their website, ESPN100.9.com. Brad, thank you so much for making the time this week on A Duff Said. I was fortunate enough to get you on the show on your off day, so thanks for making some time for me. I know you got a lot going on. Again, thanks for making the time.
Hey, man, I appreciate you, Duff. Always enjoy running into you in the region, and best of luck with A Duff Said and all the new ventures that you're working on right now. Excited to follow along moving forward.
I appreciate you saying that, and we'll definitely have you on again real soon. And that's a wrap on this edition of A Duff Said. Now, if you'd like to hear previous episodes of this podcast, all you got to do is go to my website, aduffsaid.com. Once you're there, click on the A Duff Said episode tab, and that'll take you to all our previous podcasts. You'll also find some other neat content there as well, so be sure to check out my website, aduffsaid.com. Until next time, this is Duff Tyler reminding you, if Duff said it, it must be true, because that's what A Duff Said.